Okay, now we begin the second hour. I said at the end of the first hour that this will happen at 2:15, but I was confused. It's 1:15 for those of you who are following real time. So again, this is the system dynamic model that we designed in cooperation with DFN CERT to understand the problems that we're having. And I was telling you in the previous hour that you will recognize here most of the feedback loops that we have introduced in the classes when we started with quality improvement and applying the lessons to CSETs. But in working with the DFN CERT, new aspects became important. One of the aspects was related to the fact that they needed to hire more people to be able to deal with more work, with more incidents. Still, it turned out that the resources they had, they were not enough, so the people got overworked. The other thing they had to do was to distinguish between working hard, that is, dealing with the incidents the usual way they knew that, which is the manual workload, and to develop a better way of handling incidents. In our exercise, in our first project, we had a CSERT, which was a fictitious one, one that didn't exist in that sense, where I told you that the increase of the CSERT's efficiency, of the CSERT's capability, was developed by understanding better, gaining more experience, becoming more effective in dealing with incidents. In our case here, which is a real one, what the CSERT actually did was to develop software systems to recognize incidents that had happened before and building response capability to that, so that they were able to handle those incidences automatically, which is what you see here. Now, going now at the issue of developing this automated tool, we'll see that was frustrated, it didn't work. And the reason was the impact of the feedback loops that you see here. One of the and the feedback loops that you see here, in addition to the more hiring here, mentioned as expanding budget, then you had the usual feedback loops that we knew from before, like working hard, working smart, reinvesting, which was a reinforcing loop, cutting corners, which is shortcuts one, but then you had one which was skipping information. What does that mean? But what is meant by that is that as more and more and more incidents occurred, the staff was not able to respond to all the incidents that were reported. So they simply had to drop some incidents which they didn't respond to. That's what is meant by skipping information. Simply ignoring some of the reported incidents because they were not able. And that's something that happens in real life when you have a team that is supposed to respond to things that occur. It happens also with, say, the police work. There are some, you can go to the police and announce the things that happen, and maybe they say, sorry, we cannot deal with that, we have not resources. Of course, that's based on some prioritization, and typically, you would expect that the prioritization is given the most important things, they get more priority, and less important things, they simply don't have resources to. In the case of CSERTs, it was more complicated. It turned out that they, if the customer was active and asked, what about my incident? Why are you? When do I get an answer? And so on. And those customers that were active in complaint and so on, they were prioritized, where others that inform about the incident and were not equally energetic in demanding response, they suffered the case that the incidents were not prioritized. Okay, now simulations. Here you can see several curves describing how the empirical data and the simulated data behave. So for instance, here you see from 1993 until the end of the study, 2003, the hiring of staff, and that's the blue gray curve, and the simulated curve in red. Those dedicated to manual work. Here you see the total work, again gray is empirical, red is the simulated one. The next curve, you see the curve depicting those incidents that we are giving high priority. The gray, blue-gray one is the empirical one, the red one is the simulated one. Later we will see we have a study dedicated only to that. For the time being, we forget that because the simulation that we're looking at now has to do with low priority attacks. Then you can see that originally there were very few, and then they exploded, they went up exponentially. And again, you see a very good fit between the gray, blue-gray real data and the red, which is the simulated data. Then the simulation model was used to investigate a number of important things that were happening behind the curtains. So let's look first at the bottom curve. In the bottom curve, we see the amount of staff time that was spent per incident. So in the beginning, a lot of time was spent per incident, then it became less and less and less and less and less. And the difference was dramatic, from 20 hours per person per incident to just a few minutes. Part of it can be explained with becoming more effective, but most of this dramatic fall was simply due that they didn't have time enough. So they were simply delivering less quality of service than before, because they were in a situation with more and more incidents and not as a corresponding growth in staff and resources. Which is the story that the insight that was already reported as early as 1994 by Smith and in 2003 by Kilcrease in the reports about the state of practice of the CSERTs. The CSERTs, they were overworked and understaffed. You see now, in the next curve here, how you get an explosion, exponential growth in low priority attack reported, where you see in red the response of the CSERT. And you are seeing a bigger and bigger and bigger gap between the two, indicating that the CSERT indeed was overworked and understaffed. Then, around here, the time they spent per dealing per incident was the minimum one that was responsible to use. So in the end, they started skipping information, that is, ignoring some of the reported incidents simply because they didn't have enough resources. And then finally, in this curve here, you see an intention and an effort to develop an automated response tool. And the idea was to allocate so much force, so much staff resources, that was what was allocated there. But in practice, what happened is that the real spend went like this, and then it dropped dramatically. Why? Because of the shortcuts taken. They were under such pressure to respond that the director of the CSERT simply had to tell the people who were developing automated response tool, we cannot do that, come back, handle incidents. Which is exactly the situation described also by Ripening and Sturman, that happens time and very often in connection with process improvement programs that the efforts to work smart are abandoned because of the need to respond to deadlines and shortages and so on and so on and so on. So in the end, the CSERT simply had to give it up, the effort to develop automated response tool. Well, this was the data that we used in our study, the PhD thesis of Johannes Wijk. But because of the insights delivered by Johannes Wijk that explain the reasons for the failure in developing a good tool and falling back into the trap of working hard, the CSERT, DFN CERT, did a second attempt that they managed much better. They simply had stuff allocated to tool development, no matter what, and they didn't transfer resources from tool development, from working smart to working hard. And in the second attempt, they did manage to develop a tool that was able to handle automated. But again, experiencing this worse before better situation for the CSERT. Okay, so if we now conclude this review, then indeed quality improvement is very important on its own right for security. And we do need such process improvement for better saving data reporting, which means working smart. We see a very strong similarity to the situation in traditional quality improvement and processes in other branches. But the problem is that in security, the external pressure is much higher because we are seeing more and more security incidents. That is the situation. It's much more difficult. And that is also the reason why today, in 2015, many years after the problems have been diagnosed, and we, in principle, have understood the reason why the failures are so frequent, we still are struggling to do that. So it's an opportunity for you, when you finish this study, to do something about that. So that was the first lecture today about how the problems of quality improvement arise in CSERTs and the analogies with the lessons from quality improvement. Going back to Fronta, the first two links after the introduction are the reports delivered by CERT in Pittsburgh, by Kilcrease and other authors. And then the lecture towards the cybersecurity reporting system. Now we look at the long-term instability in CSERTs in connection with high-priority incidents. In fact, this presentation was originally the presentation of a research article at FIRST, Forum for Incident Response Teams, that is FIRST. And Johannes Wijk was my PhD student, the one that I told you is now a very successful consultant and using system dynamics. It was me, and then it was Klaus-Peter Kosakowski. Klaus-Peter Kosakowski was the director, and is still the director, of the DFN CERT. He has also a part-time position at the University of Hamburg. So let's look at the problem, how we did the research, the simulation model, and what the model tells us about possible strategies. So Again, high priority incidents. There are those incidents that are new, they haven't been seen before, and therefore they require special attention and special effort to be resolved. And we are now looking at the insights that we got from studying how the CSIRT handles high priority incidents. That means we ignore low priority incidents, that is, are those that are recurrent, that are well known, like port scans, spam complaints, and so on, all these things. In reality, this is a bit of a simplification, because a CSIRT classifies the incidents not only as low and high priority, they have several kind of priorities. So we are only considering the top priority ones, and those below aggregated as low priority. But even in the low priority incidents, there are some that are have lower priority than others. But this is now not so important. Now, the first observation is high priority incidents can be reported by the organizations that are paying for the managed security service, the so-called constituents. But these reports can also come from companies or organizations outside that see that the attack is coming from one of the constituents, one or several constituents of the CSIRT. How is that? Well, that's because the attackers have taken over some computers or networks among the constituents, and they're using them to launch their attacks. So even if they are not the developers of the attack, still the attack, as seen from outside, is coming from some of the constituents. That means that the CSIRT is approached by some external organizations, say for instance a university in the United States, and say, hey, hi, one of your constituents, say the University of Hanover, has attacked us. So the high priority incident reports can come from both members and non-members of the CSIRTs. What was a little bit surprising looking at the data was that the number of high priority incidents develop first like an S-curve, so some strong growth, then it seems to be stabilizing, then even dropped, then it started again. And when the study was done, it was not quite clear as to whether it will go like this, it will go like this, or it will go like this. So we tried to understand what was happening. There were two kind of data that we had. We had the incident reported. Here in they are called incident variation because we were not allowed to report on the actual incidents. So we had to normalize that, and we are seeing only the changes relative. So these numbers that you see here, 0, 0.2, 0.4, they are not real incident numbers. They are being normalized to some number, which we don't know which one it is. We were not allowed to know. Simply, we were just asked to consider this as dimensionless, unitless numbers. So we had, on the other hand, the incidents occurring per time unit, which are these triangles, black ones. And then we were seeing the number of constituents that they were reporting, actually engaged in reporting. And again, they are not real numbers. It's not so many constituents were active in reporting. They were relative to some total number, so that the real numbers, they were not released. Again, because the CSERT, the FNCERT, didn't want in published articles to reveal how many incidents that occurred and how many customers they had. There was proprietary information. But he wanted to understand what was happening, why this S-curve first and then this dump and then up again. And what did it mean, the importance of that, and how would that influence the performance of the CSERTs in the future, what kind of strategies could be used. Well, the research approach that we use, and that gives you another glance as to how we use system dynamics, is that the real world is complex. And we deal with the real world, as we see here on the left-hand side. We have some behavior that is, things are occurring. This is due to some structure, some reasons, some logic, some causes behind, and it's difficult to see that in the real world. We have data about what is happening. The data can be numerical data. It can be reports, written information, and a lot of this is what we call mental models. That is what the people have in their heads, which supplements what exists in numbers and what is written down. Very often, these mental models are very rich. Sooner or later, they will lead also to numerical data and written information, but that there is a lag, a time lag. Now, if you create a simulation model, then you try to understand the reasons for this behavior, develop a model with that, and see if the simulated behavior makes sense compared to that. And from that, we derive improved mental models, perhaps new goals and better policies to handle the problem. The difference between the real world and the simulated world is, in the simulated world, we see the reasons, they are there, we see the connections. If they match what we are seeing in reality, then we get insights, we have understood things. And then we have also a control environment where we can conduct experiments. In practice, doing the same experiments will be very costly. You will have to invest millions and millions, and perhaps these experiments will lead to even worse results. In a simulation model, you can quickly simulate what happens and learn about good policies that you could try to apply in practice. And as I said before, in system dynamics, we have seen in different application domains that a simulation model has a return of investment of 1 to 200. So, for each euro or krona that you invest, you gain 200 in practice. Or said in other words, you will have to spend 200 times more in practice to get the same insights that you do by using a simulation model. That's the reason why good model builders that create simulations are very, very much in demand and get very well paid. So, the simulation model that we develop in the second part use a different tool than VenSim, and since it is a Norwegian one, and in fact the developer of Dynaplan is also a former PhD student of mine, then I would like to show it to you. SMIA, it's called. It doesn't have so many users as VenSim, but what it has is many users in the same company. So big companies like, for instance, banks and other, especially in Germany, they are using very actively this tool for the purposes for simulation. The last part that I put here, that the previous examination project CSIRT has been uploaded to Fronta. Actually, I have taken it down at the moment. So I can add it tomorrow. So at the moment it's not in there. I have put a different one, but I will can add it tomorrow. So in the model we are seeing here, and this is very similar to Vensim. So you are seeing, for instance, a stock. In SMEA you can have different colors depending on the units, so that's why you see here these colors. Depending on the unit that you see, the color you see, you can say what the unit is. You have dark green and light green. Dark green is sites, and light green is sites per year and so on. So we have, with respect to the CSIRTs, two kind of constituents. They are those that are occasionally reporting. We call them sporadic reporters. And you have others that are frequent reporters. And this was important for the DFN to understand why were there some of the constituents that were only rarely, even if they had incidents, rarely reporting incidents, where others they were doing that. And you had a flow of entering reporters, and some of them that were sporadic over time became frequent reporters, and then some of them stopped. And similarly here, some of them stopped reporting and so on. So in principle you see the structure here. With SMEA you can also have the arrows in any direction. So this one I put it here, and this one that was going this I put here, because in Vensim you don't have the same thing. And then this division of sporadic and frequent reporters, there's some of the, all of them are all the sites that are reporting. Then in the model we had a reinforcing loop, like showing that there was a mechanism increasing or reinforcing the number of reporters. The incident reporting rate that came from frequent reporters was by word of mouth, a mechanism that attracted some sites to start reporting. So in a sense the sporadic reporters, they were those that began using the services of the CSIRT. And if they felt that they were getting quality of service, then they got more and more of them. So that explained the original increasing curve of sites reporting. A mechanism of word of mouth, similar to the one that we have seen in connection with virus infection, which, remember, I told you that could be used also for market mechanism, leading to more and more people, say, buying a product over there. So that was the first part of the system, and that's one which is familiar to you from, in principle, from virus epidemic or innovation or word of mouth services. But the problem was that as more and more incidents are reported, then because of the limitations of resources in the CSIRTs, you had a decrease of the quality of service. And that decrease in the quality of service was perceived by those that were reporting. So if there were many more reports than the CSIRT were able to deliver with quality, then you got a balancing loop, which we call first-hand service quality perception, that started influencing this. But on the other hand, those sites that we are perhaps considering using the CSAT services did also hear via word of mouth about the decreasing quality, but they didn't experience it themselves. They heard it from those that were using the services frequently. So you had the second-hand quality perception of service quality that influenced the recruitment. And in addition, you had turnover from sporadic reporters and turnover frequent reporters, as well as a mechanism of building trust as sporadic reporters got more of the services. But when you get site turnover, losing of clients because they experience a drop of quality of service, then the originally S-curves drops down. But then as less and less customers are using the services, then the CSATs have more time to respond to the reports on high priority incidents, so the quality of service starts increasing again. So you get an oscillation, owing to which is delayed because of the time delays, owing to the improving quality of service. Once they have been losing customers, they are getting less work to do, so they are able to dedicate more time and do better results. Okay, so then you could simulate, and here you see in the simulation that the observed behavior that we had in one of the first slides is rendered here. We had first an S-shape, exponential increase, then we had the top, then a decrease, and our model shows that there will be oscillations, but these oscillations will be damped. They will have less and less amplitude over time. And this is again done due to the perceived quality of service. So for the CSAT, this behavior here is a bit annoying, because that means that they have some situation far too much work, or some others they have far too little work, and they would like to have a more predictable behavior. So how could they achieve them? So to speak, that they have a clients, a constituents mass, and that they are continuously reporting rather than dropping off and coming back and so on. So it's a question of adjusting the workload to the reporting. So we did some experiments with the simulation. Could we handle that problem better if we had more stuff, more resources? So this we could do by doubling the number of people that are doing that. That means we get then more staff here, twice as much staff, which means we have more capacity to handle incidents, which means we have, so it seems, better quality of service. What happens? Well, if we do that and double the staff in the CSAT, then we get this result here. The original one was this one, and the new result with double the staff is this one. And you see, we get the same problem, but with much stronger oscillations. So we get actually the same behavior pattern. The system adjusts to the new situation, but the problem is still there, and in fact, it's worse. This is kind of counterintuitive, but in reality, it's not so difficult to understand, because what happens is, because we have more staff, we can handle more incidents satisfactorily, which means it attracts more reporters because they are hearing, oh, the CSATs is doing good service, they are helping us to understand our problems. And then you get more and more and more sites reporting, but your resources, your staff hasn't increased after initially doubling the staff. So you get the same problem later, but you still get it. And because now the number of customers that are feeling that the quality of service is not as it should be, then you get a much bigger drop than initially. So in reality, you are making the problem worse by doubling the staff, which is a difficult thing to do. What? How will you handle that? You would expect more staff, it will help. But the problem is, again, because there are so many incidents and so many sites that are having problems, they are far too keen to take the services of the CSERT, and because the CSERT is not able to continuously doubling the staff, so in reality what happens is this dramatic drop, which is worse than to begin with. So this is not the way to go. What can we do instead? Another thing is, could we in some sense reduce the perception times? So how do you reduce perception times? Well, you can reduce perception times if you increase the quality of the information. So instead of having these times here to perceive the quality for reporters here, and the time to perceive the quality for those who may be interested in reporting to become customers and so on, if the CSERTs will dedicate the resources to inform well about the situation so that this delays in perceiving the information and what is happening become less. What happens there? Let's simulate it. And then we see that. That was the original, the base case. If we improve by better information so that we get a much quicker perception, then these oscillations become much less. Still, it's not completely stable, but you can get a much more stable situation. So again, how can you achieve that? That's not easy. In theory, it's easy to say improve the communication. But let's look at the conclusions that we drew from working together with the DFN CERT. So the main conclusion is that the oscillations that we are seeing, they are related, because they are strong time delays, related to the perception of the customers of the quality of service. And that leads to changes in the number of sites that are reporting. The goal should be stability. Nobody likes that you have situations with far too much to do and then suddenly far too little to work, especially if people will feel, okay, we don't need you more, so we fire you. Oh, come back, now we have too much to do. That's not a good situation. But with this is that it doesn't help in itself to scale up the CSERTs. That is, we will operate now with twice as many people. If you do that, it makes the problem worse. Of course, you could say, okay, then I add even more people. But then the problem is you will still get more and more reporters, and because they are experiencing so many security incidents, your staff ends up overworked, the quality of service decreases. So the perception time of the quality of service has a very strong effect on stabilization. But how do you create that in practice? It has to do with information. So it has very much as to how you build up and you deal with your constituency, with use, with the sites that are paying for the CSERTs. One of the interesting things is that apart from direct funding, this kind of impacts were not known before. Now the simulation model gives us, reveals us more other important things. Of course, staff and resources, they are important. In a sense, also if it's business for the CSERT, then more staff, and if it's doing well, will mean better business. But it seems that the CSERT has to have a very clear scope as to what is the right service level, get the resources for that, and work in very close contact with the constituency, communicating so that they are involved in the process, and those time delays that cause the big oscillations can be dumped. So that was our recommendation, and they did follow up, and the EFN CERT was actually quite satisfied with this. I would wish that we had more PhD students that were interested in this, because I'm sure that the DFN CERT will be interested in cooperating with us in more of that. So that was the end of this lecture. Let's look now at the website. The next thing is about incident reporting systems. And there I have put in, rather than giving you a lecture, I put several documents. So in the document about incident reporting systems here, you get a comparison again between safety reporting systems and security incident reporting systems. And I encourage you self-study by reading two papers, and they are by Sven, Finula Sven, who actually it is your external examiner. He was a former PhD student of mine as well. And I sent him first to the United States, where he cooperated with Professor Rich and Mick Jagger at the University of Albany, and he wrote a paper on safety reporting systems. And then when he came back to Europe, he and Professor Sariegi, a Spanish professor, and Professor Rich from Albany and me, we wrote a paper on viable information security reporting systems. I am not going to lecture that, but the papers are there. You can download them and read them. And I will post an exercise about incident reporting system tomorrow that you can do. So, DARPA. Then back to the front page. What I am going to do in the next hour, and this time it's going to be a 2:15, is to introduce a formal examination project for you. And I want you to do that as an exercise, starting today and continuing tomorrow. So again, the next hour will be dedicated to an exercise. We take a break now of 15 minutes, and the next hour begins, and this time it's correct, 2:15. Thank you.